Good morning and welcome to a Vision for You special edition. My name is Melanie and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, January 1, 2013. Happy New Year to everyone. Today, A Vision for You is bringing in the new year with a recovery special event. The topic for this meeting, Freedom from the Four Horsemen. Our guest speaker is Amy G., a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Amy's charismatic zeal for the program of recovery is evidenced by the way that she lives the message of recovery that she carries. It is my privilege to present to you Amy G. Good morning to you, Amy.
Good morning, Melanie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to everyone. Thank you so much for the honor and privilege to be able to share with you all today. It was a lovely opening, Melanie. Thank you very much. I am a recovered compulsive overeater by the grace of God and this wonderful program. And I have the privilege today to share with you my story. And one of the reasons why I picked the Four Terrible Horsemen of what it feels like after binge to wake up to terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair is that I know what that is as an active compulsive overeater. And I know what that felt like. And I hope to be able to share through my story, you know, what happened, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now by the grace of God in this program. I mean, I can tell you that I am nothing special. I am just another bozo on the bus as far as compulsive overeaters go. I mean, I never in my wildest imaginations would I think I would be here speaking in front of you all as a recovered compulsive overeater. This is a miracle of a program that offers this type of solution to us. Never in my wildest dreams, even as a kid, did I think I would be where I am today. And I am so grateful for this program. But let me just give you the basics and let me paint you a picture about me. By the grace of God in this program, I have been recovered since December 7th of 1987. So that's 25 years. Again, this is a one-day-at-a-time program. If I can do it, you can do it. My sponsor used to say, the one who got up earliest this morning is the one who has the most abstinence. Because the big book says our recovery is contingent on the maintenance of a spiritual condition. And once the food is down, that's what this program is about, is working these 12 steps one day at a time. And when we do that, we stay abstinent and recovered and sane. And that's what this program has done for me for 25 years, one day at a time. I came to the program when I was 22, so I'm somewhere around in the 40 range. And I'm grateful to be married with two wonderful children. And to tell you the lengths of this disease, of where it took me, I'm also recovering bulimic, I'm a recovering anorexic, I'm a recovering compulsive overeater, I'm a recovering drug addict, I'm a recovering alcoholic, I mean, you name it, if it altered my mood, I was addicted to it. But my primary substance was food. My top weight, I stopped weighing around 170-ish. My lowest weight was 102. There's a huge range of extremes here. This disease took me to the gutter and left me there without any hope. So I don't know about you all, but I believe firmly in what this program has taught me, that this is a twofold disease. It is a physical allergy and a mental obsession, and that the greater aspect is the mental obsession, because I tried stopping a bazillion times with diets and whatever, but I could never stay stopped. I could never stop going to that first bite, and I believe that to be the mental obsession. And then I believe what the doctor opinion says, that once that manifestation of the physical allergy take place and I put the substance in my system, that I cannot stop. Now, granted, I didn't understand all of this as a kid. I didn't understand anything. I don't know if I was born with this disease or I just abused sugar and massive amounts of foods to the point where there became this manifestation. I don't know which, but I can tell you right now, I know who I am, and I know that I am a compulsive overeater. And that is the foundation of my program, is never questioning anymore. You know, I have resigned from the debating society about who and what I am. I know. It doesn't matter, chicken or the egg. I know what I am. And from my earliest beginnings, you know, when I look back about me and Amy when I was a kid, I always felt like I had a special relationship with food. It always called to me. I was a little girl, and my earliest remembrances is when we left the United States. I'm a Foreign Service brat, and we moved to the Dominican Republic. And this was a huge adjustment for me. I was 7 years old, and we went from just a normal suburbia in Winchester, Massachusetts, to Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic, where we had maids and servants and chauffeurs and walls and bars and fences and gates, and a third world country where children starving, begging me for money. It was a huge adjustment for me as a seven-year-old. But one of the things I can tell you when I look back in my memories, the things that I remember are food-related. I would remember going to school and waiting for the clock, just waiting for school to be over, because then I knew that I could get home and my maids would have made my favorite pastry, my favorite snack. You know, these are the things that I remember. My parents entertained a lot. I'm the youngest of four. You know, I'm going to date myself a bit here, but at these parties, it was like the Sound of Music. Well, we all had to come down to the show and present ourselves. And I just remember feeling so uncomfortable in my skin, going, you know, coming down here and saying hello to people. And what did I do is I followed and I looked like a beeline, you know, for the hors d'oeuvres tray, for the appetizer tray, so that I could get something to eat to feel comfortable with myself. You know, again, if we go to the doctor's opinion, it talks about this, that men and women drink, or I'll paraphrase, say eat, essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol, by food. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks or bites that they see everyone else taking with impunity. This was me. Again, I didn't understand this as a kid, but I was having already a special relationship. I felt uncomfortable with me. What was my answer? My answer was to reach for a substance that gave me a sense of ease and comfort. Now, I was a kid. I was running around. I was not heavy. I'll be honest with you, I was not a heavy kid. I didn't go through that. I was a tomboy. I was active. I was on a national swim team. We were swimming all over the country, all over the Caribbean. But I will tell you something that was going on at the swim team at that time. They had glucose powder. One of the things that the coach would do, or his assistant coach, is right before you swam your race, they would give you a couple of spoonfuls of glucose powder to do what? To raise your blood sugar level so that when you swam, particularly for the sprinters like me, you would fly. And I could remember, whether I was swimming or not, you know, after a while, is chasing that glucose powder, looking for that glucose powder, whether I had a swim meet or not, begging the coach, you know, can I have a little of that? Have you got any left over? You know, this was me at that point. And it was a terrible foreshadowing of my cocaine and amphetamine addiction down the road, because I was using that as well to try to maintain my weight later on in the years. So we then moved from the Dominican Republic when I was 13 back to the United States. Again, another huge adjustment for me. I grew up in height. I was in fifth grade at that point. I was probably a foot taller than everybody else. I was pigeon-toed. I had, you know, the green fluorescent hair from swimming. I had braces. I mean, I was not a happy camper. And we lived right next door to the elementary school. And I say that for a reason, because when I came back and into the middle of the fifth grade, looking the way I did, feeling the way I did about myself, at lunchtime I used to sneak out and go home, because it was right next door, and eat all lunch hour and then sneak back, because it was the only way that I could cope. Food at that point became a coping mechanism. Now, again, I'm not telling you that I ate because I had problems. I ate because I was a compulsive overeater. Nobody tied me down and threw food down my throat. That obsession and physical allergy was well on its way by the time I was probably 10. 13, especially when I came back to the United States. I was dealing with a craving, a chronic, what does it say here on page XXXVII? You know, all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It never has been in any treatment which we are familiar permanently eradicated. The only relief is entire abstinence. Again, these men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. This craving for me was beyond my mental control. By the time I was 13, I was off to the races, and I didn't understand what was going on, but all I knew was that I needed something to give me sense of ease and comfort, and I didn't know where else to find it except in the food. This was, again, a terrible, difficult adjustment time for me. My family was going through a rough period as well. You know, not all family, you know, not every family is functional. Some are worse than others. Again, not blaming my family. But the bottom line was, is I started the real binging syndrome at that time. And, you know, I went through junior high school and high school. I got hooked on drugs. Why? Because I wanted to maintain my weight. At that point, I had stopped swimming, and I had started wanting to go out with boys and, you know, be part of a crowd and fit in and be popular, and my weight started climbing up. And then I started smoking pot. You know, it was in the 70s and, you know, early 80s, and to fit in, to have an automatic peer group, what did I do? I started getting high, and I started doing drugs, and I got hooked on that immediately as well. But, you know, when you get high, when you finish eating, finish getting high, you get hungry, and you get the munchies. We always used to call it the munchies. So this started a terrible cycle of just this dieting mentality, of this binging mentality, where I couldn't see myself out. And, you know, because at that point, too, I had bought into the myth that the world sells you, which to me I thought was thin as well, that I would do anything to be thin. I didn't want to give up the food, but I wanted to be thin. So what was my answer? My answer at that point was amphetamines, was cocaine, was the starvation diets. I remember one grapefruit diet. I don't think I've ever been able to touch a grapefruit since because of some of these diets that I would try, the protein diets, all of those things. I mean, you name it, I tried it, and I could not maintain my weight. And the craziness of this disease, the insanity of this disease, is that these diets, I only gained weight. I would lose 20 pounds, but then I would gain 30, you know? And I would look at myself in the mirror, and this is when the Four Terrible Horsemen would come in, because I would say, you know, I'm not going to eat, I'm not going to eat. I would put the posters on the refrigerator. I would commit. My parents even tried to help me. They'd offer me a new wardrobe if I lost such and such amount of weight. And, you know, and next day I would be in front of the refrigerator, what I would call my blackout binges, in front of it, 5 bites into the binge, going, how the hell did I get here? You know, what happened that brought me here? And I couldn't understand why I didn't have enough willpower to stop this. My family's motto was, all it takes is a little willpower. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. What's the matter with you, Amy? You can't control an inanimate object. You can't stay on a diet. But that's the thing. I could start a diet and I could stop, but I could never stay stopped. And I tried and I tried. And one day I was on summer vacation and a friend of mine said to me, just stick your finger down your throat. You can just do that. Eat all you want, and then just stick your finger down your throat. And I thought this was, you know, the magic cure. I thought that this was it. I could be thin, and I could have my food at the same time. Well, not to gross people out, but again, these are the lengths that this disease took me. You know, this disease warps our mind. The paragraph in step one, which is so fantastic in our 12 and 12. It says it's truly awful to admit that food or alcohol in hand, we have warped our minds into such an obsession for destructive eating or drinking that only an act of providence, i.e. God, can remove it from us. This is the destruction. It didn't occur to me that bulimia would be like a crazy thing to do. You know, I thought it was the answer. And so I had to work at it. My tongue would cramp. I couldn't get anything off. But like a good compulsive overeater, I worked at it, and I became very, very good at it. But here's the insanity of this disease, because it is progressive. Most people, I had assumed, used bulimia to continue to stay thin. But what happened is where this disease took is my bulimia allowed me to eat more. It allowed me, all it did was allow my binges to go longer. I wasn't able to maintain my weight because I was consuming at that point so many calories. Because what would I do? I would eat to the point of being full. I mean, like bursting full, like I'm going to implode. Then, you know, in most cases, I used to lay down on the couch and just pass out. But at that point, because I had understood bulimia and learned how to throw up, I would just go in the bathroom and puke, empty out my stomach, and then go on to start eating again. So I could literally, you know, binge and purge, you know, for 2 or 3 days. I was starting to skip school. My grades were falling. You know, I was a straight-A student. I wanted the world to see a perfect picture, you know, a thin, beautiful, athletic, you know, straight-A student. Meanwhile, you know, that picture that I tried to portray, I was dying inside of this disease, binging and purging my brains out. I was 18 at that point, my senior year in high school, and I could write my own notes, so I was sick quite often. And I remember I would sit there, and I would wait till my mom would go to school. My mom would go to work. I would pretend to get up and go to school, and what I did instead is I hid on the side of my bed, under the bed, I hid. And then I waited till I heard the door close, and I would get up, and I would raid the refrigerator, reading Harlequin novels, watching TV, and I would do that, you know, all day long and all night long. And I would wake up, and this four terrible horsemen of fear, desperation, frustration, I'm not knowing why I did what I did, the terror. I remember one morning waking up just in a sugar haze. I had so much sugar in my system from binging and purging, and I hadn't been drinking any water. I believe I was so dehydrated that I literally fainted on the floor when I woke up and got out of the bed. I stood up and I fainted, and I woke up in such terror and such despair and such depression. I mean, I was being tackled and trampled by those four horsemen, and I remember I got up. And I looked in the mirror. I was standing up by my dresser with the mirror on top. And I took my fist when I looked at myself in such hatred because I didn't understand why I didn't have any willpower. And I punched the mirror and I broke it. And I put a couple of, I think I broke a knuckle or two, because I hated myself at that point. I hated myself. Well, fast forward a little bit here. Oh, I need to backtrack as well. That in my junior year in high school, I took a geographical cure. I went to Norway for a year as an exchange student, and I dieted on amphetamines all summer before. I dropped 20 pounds. I went, oh, it's going to be a new life. Well, you know, guess what? Wherever you go, you take yourself with you. And within a month, I was binging. I was binging and purging, and I came back home 50 pounds heavier. And you need to understand, my parents, who had not seen me for a year, saw me get off that plane, and their jaws dropped to the floor. We had a stopover in New York, and I met up with someone who was drinking, and they proceeded to throw up on my white pants. I was drunk when I got off the plane. I had been binging and purging in the bathroom of the airplane, and I was 50 pounds heavier. Now, my mother, again, not to blame my parents, but my mother was very much about status, a diplomat. You know, she used to say overseas, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, you can do whatever you want to do. Remember, you represent the United States of America. You know, this is a 7-year-old person. What does that mean to me? I don't know. But it was a lot of pressure, and I remember her jaw dropping to the floor when she saw me with the vomit on my pants, swaying because I was drunk, you know. And I wanted the floor to open up and just drop me. Yeah, I wanted to be swallowed up at that point. And again, another summer of amphetamines, another summer of dieting, and that brought us to our senior year. When I graduated from high school, just barely, I went to Norway for a year. or excuse me, I went to Norway to St. Olaf College. I only lasted a year there, but I wanted to study Norwegian. And I went to Northfield, Minnesota, and I thought Norway was cold, but I'm telling you what, it didn't matter how cold it was. I always made it to the cafeteria. I always made it there. And when they couldn't get out because it was so windy and it was so cold, you know, they call it the Windy City or whatever, Northfield was just like that, we ordered pizza in. And, you know, I can just tell you this cycle over and over and over again of saying, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I go ahead. I start binging. And then I wake up and I find out, oh, my gosh, I've done it again. I've done it again. And, you know, in college, you have your own life at that point. I was taking all my money that my parents gave me to school to go and buy books. And I was writing fake party lists on a piece of paper. And I was going to the grocery store. I was pretending that I was buying for a party, getting grocery bags of food, and going back to my, you know, going back to my dorm room. My dorm mate always left, and I was alone for the weekend. And I just remember binging and purging all weekend long. And it was a terrible cycle. And I remember I got to a point with the bulimia. It was very hard to get everything up. I was still gaining massive amounts of weight very quickly. And I remember I was using ladles and spoons and things to help get deeper down. And I just remember thinking, God, if I could just stick this in my chest. Again, I looked in the mirror. I punched the bed frames. Again, broke knuckles in my hand because of the hatred that I felt for myself. At that time, I just wanted to die, and I didn't have the guts to do it. So this was in 1982, and I remember, you know, and this is totally, I believe, to be God, you know, divine intervention. I walked to the cafeteria to go for a binge. I was completely hopeless at that point. I'd put on 30 pounds. I just wanted to go home. I was failing out of school, and I saw a sign for an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. And I thought, this is a diet club I haven't heard of before. And, well, maybe I'll just go check it out. And I'll be honest with you, if I'd known what it really was, I probably would have run the hell in the other direction. Because to me, at that point, I thought all I needed was a diet. I just needed a diet. Well, you and I all know, it's like, you know, a diet's like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound for a compulsive overeater. That ain't going to get it. So, anyways, I went to this meeting, and I was astounded to hear people tell their stories. You know, we were talking about in the prior meeting, Vision for You meeting earlier today, about how we tell our stories so that people can relate. That is what you all did for me. I heard people talk about food that I had never heard anyone else say. I heard someone say they went and they put food in the trash can and they put like dry detergent on it so they wouldn't go back. And 8 hours later, we're back in the trash can wiping off the detergent and getting the food, about eating frozen food, burnt food. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I've done all of that. I have done all of that. And I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, could this be something for me? What is this compulsive overeating? What are they talking about? And I always thought, oh, my gosh, you brought me hope. You brought me hope. You brought me, like, that I was not alone. And that was the beginning for me. But then you started talking about God, and I thought, God, my Zeus-like character, ready to zap me with a lightning bolt, you know, I'm no good, I'm not good enough, didn't give me what I wanted. I was done with God at that point. So when they started talking about God, I got up in the middle of the meeting, and I left. I started to walk out, and I thought, this is not going to work for me. And I'll never forget, you all, this is where it's so important where we carry the message, where we love the compulsive overeater when they can't love themselves. Someone got up and followed me out the meeting. I was a newcomer. Someone got up and followed me out of the meeting and kindly said to me, you know what, this may not be for you, but here's a pamphlet. Here's a pamphlet that says, are you a compulsive overeater? And there's 15 questions on it. She didn't come after me talking about God or anything like that. She came after me. She wanted to convince me that I would, basically she talked to me about step one, the powerlessness of step one. She didn't even talk about recovery or anything about the 12 steps, about God or anything. What she did is she allowed this disease to talk to me. because she talked about powerlessness. She handed me that pamphlet with 15 questions on it. Are you a compulsive overeater? And I answered yes to every single question. Trust me, this was the first A or 100% I'd gotten on a test in a long time. And it was like cold water, like just splashed me in the face. And I thought, this is me. I am a compulsive overeater. I do what they do. I answered yes to all these questions. This must be for me. And at that point, I thought, you know, I don't know about the God thing, but they got something I want. They got something I want. And I'm going to start going to these meetings because their ability to not keep binging was something that I wanted because I wanted to stop. So I started going to those meetings. I transferred back to Maryland, and I started going to meetings there. And for 4 years, this is important, I really want to talk about this. For 4 years, I addressed the physical aspect of this disease, and I could not stay stopped. I would have 3 months of abstinence here or there. I would, you know, but I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't go to meetings. You know, I did not truly work this program, and I did not work the steps. And if we go to how it works, one of my favorite chapters, it says it here, you know, our stories disclose in a general way what it used to be like, or, you know, are we willing to go to any length to get it? Then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these steps, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, but the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember, we deal with alcohol, with food, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. I struggled with the concept of God. I balked at suggestions that were given to me. I thought I could find an easier, softer way. Because, you see, I didn't have a lot of weight to lose. I lost those 30, 40 pounds, and I thought I was doing fine. I looked good. I could talk the talk, you know, and I thought that I was doing all right. Well, here's what happened. When you hit maintenance and there's nothing to focus on with the physical aspect and then you have to focus on the rest of the stuff, if you're not working the steps, you might as well just be stone cold, crazy, dry drunk, because that's what I was. And I stayed on that losing maintenance plan, and I was crazy and insane enough that I got anorexic there. I got anorexic in OA. Talk about an overachiever here. People started telling me, Amy, you look too thin. Amy, something's up. Are you sick? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. No, I'm fine. And I got thinner and thinner and thinner. You know, I went to the doctor because I got really sick. I was malnourished. And the doctor said to me, Amy, you need to eat. And it was like the switch was flipped. Oh, I need to eat? Okay, I'll eat. And I started binging again, and I was purging again. After 2 or 3 years, I was right back at it. Trust me, this disease is progressive. And I was binging and purging like I had never done before. You know, they say OA is like the mafia. Once you get in, you never go out, because you never get out because you know too much. Now, every time I binged and I couldn't stop, I thought, oh, my gosh. It was like OA was ruining my binges because now I understood about compulsive overeating. At least I had knowledge, and I couldn't stop still. And this was the foundation that brought me to the bottom to finally working this program like my life depends upon it, because I got to a point at year 4 in OA that I could not truly stop, even with all that I knew about compulsive overeating. Knowledge was not enough. You know, it was just not enough. And I could not stop. You know, this whole thing with, there's a quote here about the hot flame, you know, or the hot stove, that we continued to stick our hand into the stove, onto the hot flame, which is exactly what I did. And finally I hit a bottom that said, I don't care what it takes. I don't care what I need to do. I am going to work this program like my life depends upon it, because I knew true powerless then like I had never known before. And, you know, this, I'm trying to look for that hot stove quote. Here it is. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind that deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea, this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. You know, and so this is what I was doing. And finally, and I call it divine intervention, you know, the little part inside of you that says, okay, it's time to surrender. It's time to give up 100%. And that's what I did. I got a sponsor. I got a recovered sponsor. I got a home group. I got a food plan. Food plan to me was very, very important. I needed boundaries. I needed to know what is abstinent on my plan and what is not. Where is the line? Where is putting the plug in the jug? You know, where is it that says this is going to be my food plan, this is what I'm going to stick to, and I am not going to deviate from it. It's nutritious, it's healthy for me, it's given to me by a professional. I don't write my own food plan. I get it from someone else. That's part of the surrender and accountability of this program. And I got a recovered sponsor. And she started taking me to chapters like the doctor's opinion, studying more about alcoholism, reading quotes like, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholics or compulsive overeaters, that this was the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. You know, the persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Well, that's where I was headed, folks. I was headed towards insanity and death. I wanted to die, and I could not stop eating. Finally, it was smashed into me. So I started studying this big book. I started listening to what people were saying. My sponsor said to me, for the first year of your recovery, everything you are thinking is wrong. Everything you're thinking is wrong because your entire life has been focused around getting your substance, being restless and irritable, and then finding an insane excuse. You can't fight your mental obsession with your mind because the issue is your mind. You can't fight your willpower with your willpower. You can't fight your mind with your mind. From now on, whatever you think is wrong. She was tough, but she was exactly what I needed. So we started studying the big book. We did the steps. I wrote about the steps. I studied the steps every day. I did reading and writing. I did whatever was necessary. Step zero, put the food down, and then I dove into these steps, and I dove into these big book. I was led by a recovered sponsor, and this is what did it for me. This is what brought me out of the gates of insanity or death, and instead of sticking my hand on the hot flame, you know, I was able to recoil from it. I was able and have been able now for many one day at a time to be able to recoil from it. The promises have come true for me. And if they can come true for me, they can come true for anyone else here on this line. If you've been slipping and sliding, I mean, I've done it all in OA, you know. You could be slipping and sliding, talking the talk, but not walking the walk. I urge you, you have measures. You know, do you have a sponsor? Do you have a home group? Do you have boundaries around your food plan? Go back into the doctor's opinions. Are you truly surrendered? These are questions that had to come to me from someone so that I could finally surrender to step one, 100% without question. You know, and then we came up against the God thing, firmly agnostic at that point. And she said to me, all right, Amy, if you're not going to go with the God thing, I'll tell you what, do you believe that this is an issue of being a hopeless state of mind and body? That's what they say. And I said, yeah, I am hopeless. And she said, do you believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity? And I said, you know what? I know it isn't me. And she said, that's right. I don't care if you think it's Jesus, Buddha, or the universal vibes of a tree, as long as that power is not you. And I got that because I knew that me, myself, and I could not stand alone against this disease of compulsive overeating. So I was willing to believe in the power of the group, the power of those who had recovered and gone before, and I was willing to believe in a power source outside of myself that was greater than me. And for a while, it was just the group, and over the years, it began to come around to a type of faith for me that is a gracious God of my understanding, a relationship with a higher power that I never dreamed possible. You know, my sponsor made it very clear that if you wanted to develop a relationship with a power greater than yourself, then you needed to work on that on a daily basis. And that's what I did. you know, I get up in the morning every morning and I ask God, now my higher power, I ask God for release from the merciless obsession, from the allergy, from my compulsive overeating, and to serve him in any way that I can today, to be of use. And that's what I do today as a wife, you know, as a mother. It is unbelievable what this program has done for me. I came to this program as a single, immature, warped, compulsive overeater at age 22. This program taught me how to be a woman of my community, a working woman, how to have a relationship, how to be married, how to have children in abstinence and recovery, how to go through death, health issues, everything. There is not a thing out there that hasn't happened that I haven't been able to work through with this program through these 12 steps. I urge you on the line on these 12 steps. This program is about putting the food down and working these 12 steps like our life depend upon it. As soon as I got that grasp of a higher power, I was off and running to step 3 and then 4 and 5, those working steps, 6, 7, 8, and 9, reparation and repair, and then the maintenance steps, you know, 10, 11, and 12. I do a 10-step or 11-step, as they call it, every night. I look at my day. You know, we've talked over the last few days about taking that pause before we react to things. You know, going through the day, if we're confused or if we're in doubt, that we sit quietly, we ask for God, we ask for an intuitive moment. You know, these are the steps in my life every day. These are what we do. These are what we do. And again, because of that, I don't wake up in the morning and have to make a New Year's resolution on January 1st. I don't wake up in the morning in a sugar haze, in terror, knowing that I would not be able to stop it again, in despair and depression. The four terrible horsemen are gone. They are gone. And what is the riot is that some of you all know, as I train horses, I ride horses, I understand what it is to be trampled by a horse. This is what is not part of my life anymore. The four terrible horsemen are gone, and I wake up with a zeal for life. Now, life has not always been great for me. This year, for example, has been a rough year for me. Back surgery, dealing with pain in a way that I've never imagined possible. And it brings me to tears to think about how you all supported me. The fellowship came around me and helped me through this. And I can honestly tell you, in those moments of pain and hurt, when I didn't know what was going to happen, whether I would ever get off the bed, that, you know, not in my darkest moments, I would have rather died. But if someone came to me, and let me rephrase that, if someone came to me and said, Amy, if you eat, I will take away your pain. I will take away your pain. I will tell you that I would not have done it. I would have rather died than pick up that first bite, because I knew that if I had taken that first bite, all bets were off. I would never make it. I would never make it. Because I would never be able to stop after that first bite. So instead, I powered through with my higher power and with you all. And now I'm out of the bed, and I had surgery. I was able to get through that. I had people bringing me meals, abstinent food. I had support that I'd never dreamed possible. And that's what this program is. This program is about love. It is about the 12 steps. It is about God. It is about surrender. That we have to surrender to win. Freedom isn't free. We have to work for it. But working for it, oh my gosh, what it gives us is beyond our wildest dreams. This is why we call the meeting the vision for you. The vision, you can't even imagine what this program brings to you. This is why we read the vision for you paragraph at the end of each of these meetings, because this is what this program offers to us. It offers a new way to deal with life, a way to empower us to deal with life in a way that isn't just surviving or anesthetizing ourselves or anything like that. It is a program for life, joyous, free, be able to deal with calamity, all of those things. This is what this program offers us. And it starts with surrender. It starts with putting the food down. There is a choice there. We need to understand there is a choice there. There is a choice to work this program or not. There is that choice. Yes, I am powerless over the food, but I am responsible for my recovery and what I do in that recovery process every single day. And that is a choice. So I just beg of you all on the line, you know, if you're struggling, if you are a newcomer, get a recovered sponsor, get a strong home group, start working this program, start studying the big book. You know, if you're someone that has been slipping and sliding in OA for years, I beg of you to look truly back to the doctor's opinion. Is the true surrender there? You know, are you balking? Are you half measuring? Take a look at those. Work with your sponsor. You know, have a come to Jesus meeting with your higher power, so to speak. You know, what is it that needs to be done? Are you aware of your relapse warning signs? What is bringing you? What in the mental obsession? Because I can tell you that, you know, in a vision for you, it says here, we could be like children whistling in the dark. Inwardly, you would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with it. You know, if we're still thinking that way, we're not recovered. We are not recovered. Kim said something very interesting and very phenomenal this morning that says she no longer wants to eat. That's what a recovered person is. We no longer want to eat. We no longer need to stick our hand on the stove anymore because we have something that is more powerful than that. We have a higher power. We have this program. We have these 12 steps. And if you're willing to work it, then this program is for you. Page 17, on the very beginning of this book, and this is what I will close with. It says here on page 17, here we go. There is a solution. This is the chapter. There is a solution. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. Common, meaning ordinary, you, me. There is no secret code to this program. It is a common solution, and we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly, harmonious action. This is the great news that this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism and compulsive overeating. The solution is here, folks. The recovery is here. It's here if you want it. It's here if you want to work it. The choice is yours, and I pray that you make that choice today, because I stand before you, a recovered person, for 25 years telling you that one day at a time it is possible. If I can do it, you can do it. For those that have gone in this book, they've recovered. They've got the solution. They have gone before. They have a way. They will show you the way. We will show you the way. Just be willing to do it. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much for the honor and privilege of letting me share.
Thank you very much, Amy. That was such a clear, vivid picture of the 12 steps at work and how you described the freedom from the four horsemen that occurred in your life. What a miracle. Thank you so much. Do you have time to stick around for one, maybe two questions?
Sure.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. The floor is open for maybe one, perhaps two questions before we start off for our next special meeting event. Who would like to ask a question? You can press star one on your phone keypad.
I would like to ask a question. My name is Rita Melanie. Amy, thank you so much. Would you be willing to give your phone number?
Sure. My cell number is 301-300-9325. I'm Eastern Standard Time, and the best time to reach me is before 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Before 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you so much, Amy, for your service and your, I don't know, earth shattering, for me, such a shattering confirmation of this program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rita. How about one more question? Anyone else have one more question for Amy?
This is Rebecca.
I hear Rebecca.
Hi, Rebecca from Connecticut, recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, Amy. I was wondering if you could touch on the fact that you were also involved in other substances besides food, and did you put all of them down before you picked up the steps, or just the food?
Yes, all of them. Yes, when I came to OA and started working the program, yes, all of them, because anything that alters my mood stands in the way of my relationship with my higher power, and once that's blocked, I'm not hooked into my power source anymore. And I'll go back to the insanity of any of those substances, but primarily the food. So it was very important. And my sponsor made that very clear, very quickly, you know, once I got a recovered sponsor. That's why I strongly suggest a recovered sponsor, because, you know, I didn't know any better. And she's like, no, we don't do that. No, we don't do this. And no, you put that down too. And then explained to me again the mental obsession and the physical allergy. And I believe the allergy for me, the abnormal reaction to those mood-altering substances, all of them, are an issue for me. That once they affect me mentally, then that is something I can't be touching. I can't be playing with, because it's going to lead me all back to the food, and the food will take me down. I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Rita and Rebecca. Questions. That's all the time we have to take for right now at this particular time. There'll probably be more time for other things after the second speaker today. But I'm going to close this wonderful meeting with page 164. My name is Melanie. I'm a compulsive overeater and grateful to have been able to moderate this meeting. Thank you so much, Amy, for all that you've given. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we will surely meet. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.